Welcome to Akantra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akantra AI. Today we're doing a deep dive into a really significant novel, Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other. It won the Booker Prize back in 2019, and, well, it's just essential reading, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It feels less like just a novel and more like a landmark.
Right. It really maps out contemporary British identity in a way few books have. We're aiming this discussion at thoughtful readers, literature students maybe, anyone really who wants to get under the skin of how it portrays Black British womanhood.
And it does that with such complexity across class, generations, sexuality. It refuses easy answers.
Before we jump into the story itself, maybe a little context on Evaristo. She wasn't exactly an overnight success.
No, not at all. She has this incredibly rich background, born in 59, mixed Nigerian and English heritage, and decades of work in poetry and drama that really informs her style.
The fusion fiction idea.
Exactly. She blends that poetic rhythm, that intensity, with the storytelling scope of prose. It's quite unique.
And that Booker win in 2019, jointly awarded, wasn't it, was historic. First Black woman ever to win.
A huge moment. It really felt like a signal, you know, a shift in what the literary world was paying attention to, what stories were seen as central.
Definitely. It's like the book itself is making an argument for complexity, pushing back against monolithic views.
Precisely. It's an artistic statement as much as a narrative one.
Okay, so our mission today, then, is to sort of grapple with that complexity. We want to unpack its structure, which is pretty unusual, trace the journeys of these 12 central women, see how their lives connect, and really dig into the core themes, intersectionality, connection, resilience, all the stuff that makes it resonate so much.
Sounds good. Where do you want to start? The structure seems like a natural place.
Yeah, let's kick off there, because that's the first thing you notice, isn't it? No single main character, no straightforward plot line.
Mm-hmm.
How does she pull that off and still tell a cohesive story?
Well, think of it less like a single path and more like a tapestry. You've got 12 main threads, each one a Black British woman. Different ages from teens to 90s, really different backgrounds, different lives.
So it's deliberately panoramic.
Exactly. The whole point is to challenge that idea that there's one Black British experience. Evaristo shows you it's multiple, it's layered, sometimes it's even contradictory.
And these threads, these stories, they don't just run in parallel.
No, that's the clever part. They're designed to intersect. They all converge at one specific point in time.
Ah, the play opening.
That's it. The structural anchor, the climax, if you like, is the opening night of this play. The last Amazon of Dahomey happening in London.
And suddenly characters you thought were separate.
Right. The banker, the teacher, the student activist, the playwright herself, Amma. Their paths physically cross at this event. It ties everything together.
Why a play, do you think? Is there something symbolic about that setting? Performance, maybe?
I think so, yeah. A play is public storytelling, isn't it? It's constructed reality. Maybe Evaristo's suggesting identity is a bit like that personal, yes, but also performed, curated, seen by others.
That makes sense. Especially with things like code switching that come up later.
And the structure itself, that kaleidoscopic design, it mirrors that fragmentation, you know? Our individual lives might feel separate, but they bump up against each other, creating this larger shared picture, even if we don't always see the connections.
Okay, so trying to grasp all 12 women at once might be a bit much for listeners. Maybe we could group them. Look at some key pairings or contrasts that Evaristo sets up.
That's probably the best way in. We could start with, say, the generational and artistic core. Amma is central.
The playwright.
Yeah, she's in her 50s, a pioneer in Black British theater. Her story explores the sacrifices, the isolation of being a trailblazer. Then you have her daughter, Yaz.
19, university student. Big contrast.
Huge. Yaz embodies that new generation's fire. Her radicalism clashes with Amma's more established, maybe slightly compromised artistic position. It's that classic mother-daughter dynamic, but layered with artistic and political tension.
And that generational thing links into class and migration too, doesn't it? Through characters like Bumi and Carol.
Oh, absolutely. That's a brilliant contrast. Bumi is the immigrant mother figure. You get the sense of her sacrifices, the cultural dislocation, the economic struggle, the deferred dreams. She provides that crucial history.
And then Carol, her daughter, is the picture of success. Investment banker.
Right. She's achieved that upward mobility. But, and this is key, Evaristo shows us the psychological toll.
The imposter syndrome. The code switching.
Exactly. Carol's story is just a masterclass in showing the sheer exhaustion of navigating white corporate Britain. Code switching, it's not just changing how you talk, right? It's this constant mental gymnastics, modifying your behavior, your presentation, everything, just to fit in, to survive professionally.
It sounds draining.
It is. And Evaristo captures that internal cost so well.
And then, as a counterpoint to Carole's world, there's Letitia.
Yeah, Letitia, working class single mother. Her story really highlights how race, class, and gender intersect to create barriers. But crucially, she's not portrayed as just a victim. There's immense strength there, resourcefulness, a real refusal to be broken by the system.
Evaristo seems determined to cover all bases, including identities that challenge neat categories, like Megan Morgan and Penelope.
Those two are so important. Megan Morgan, the non-binary character, insists on self-definition, on fluidity, pushing against fixed ideas of gender and race.
And Penelope's story is fascinating, discovering her hidden Black heritage much later in life.
Right. It completely unravels assumptions about race, about passing, about who belongs where. It shows identity isn't just about the present. It's tangled up with history, ancestry, perception. These characters really drive home Evaristo's core ideas about identity.
Okay, laying it out like that really shows the incredible range. So let's unpack the big themes then. How does this huge cast help her explore intersectionality?
Well, the novel basically is intersectionality in action. It's living proof that there's, and I'm quoting loosely here, no singular Black British woman's experience. That's the main takeaway.
Seeing the differences within the group.
Precisely. The novel says, look, we are not the same woman multiplied. We are not a homogenous group. We never were. You have to see the individual tapestry class, age, sexuality, geography. All of it matters.
Which links to that idea of identity being fluid, not fixed.
Absolutely. It's presented as a journey, not a destination. There's a line about how identity is not a fixed thing. It's fluid. We're all becoming until we stop becoming. It acknowledges the constant work involved in figuring out who you are, especially when the world wants to slap a label on you.
And that sense of ongoing struggle connects to the tensions between generations, doesn't it? The younger ones feeling like they're fighting new battles.
Oh, yeah. Evaristo nails that friction. There's that great quote, something like the older generation saying, "The trouble with you young ones is you think you invented injustice, and we oldies were just sitting around admiring the scenery."
Yes. A necessary reality check.
It is. It reminds you that progress is built cumulatively. Each generation stands on the shoulders of the last, even while they're critiquing the foundations. It's messy, but it's how change happens.
Okay, let's circle back to something you mentioned, the psychological cost, the systemic barriers. This is where it gets really interesting, I think.
Yes. Evaristo is incredible at showing the internal impact. There's this really powerful metaphor she uses for what it's like constantly navigating hostile, white-dominated environments. A character achieves success, but then...
And what?
Then she realizes she's been holding her breath for decades, waiting for permission to breathe freely in her own skin.
Wow. Holding her breath for decades. That's visceral.
Isn't it? It just perfectly captures that exhausting hypervigilance, the constant self-monitoring that comes with trying to be respectable enough, palatable enough to avoid discrimination.
That respectability politics idea.
Exactly. Evaristo shows it's not a solution. It's a survival tactic that takes a huge toll. It drains your energy just trying to exist in those spaces.
Okay, we absolutely have to talk about the writing style itself. Because it's not just what she says, but how she says it. That fusion fiction again.
Yes, the style is doing so much work. That blend of poetry and prose gives it this unique rhythm, doesn't it? It feels almost musical sometimes.
Like jazz, maybe?
Yeah, maybe like jazz. Long, flowing sentences, like verse, lots of energy, but still driving the story forward. It reflects the flow of memory, of community.
And the really noticeable thing, visually on the page even, is the lack of punctuation. Hardly any full stops, no quotation marks for dialogue. Why do that?
It's a very deliberate choice, I think. It connects to oral storytelling traditions. By removing those standard markers, she blurs the lines between speech, thought, and narration.
So dialogue flows right into internal monologue.
Seamlessly. It creates this incredibly immersive feeling. You're right in the character's head, or maybe in a shared consciousness. It suggests language is communal, fluid, not something rigidly boxed off.
So the style reinforces the themes.
Definitely. And when you put that immersive style together with all these different perspectives, all these challenges they face, the overall feeling you're left with is one of incredible resilience.
Yes. That comes through so strongly.
It does. The whole book feels geared towards showing agency, the determination to survive, to thrive against the odds. There's this sentiment, almost a mantra, that echoes across different characters. She was not about to be anyone's victim. She was going to be a survivor, a thriver. She was going to make something of her life.
That feels like the heart of it, really.
It really does. It's an affirmation of hope, grounded in the reality of struggle.
So wrapping this up, what's the big picture takeaway for someone reading this novel? How does it change things?
I think it fundamentally shifts the frame of reference for what constitutes a British story. It puts Black British women in all their diversity right at the center, not on the margins.
Yeah, it does it through innovative form, too.
Yes. It shows that radical literary form, the structure, the style, isn't just experimental for its own sake. It can be the engine for telling urgent, socially relevant stories in a new way. It makes transformative art that genuinely expands how we understand community.
It teaches us, I suppose, that all our individual stories, however separate they seem, are actually strands in this much bigger, complex, collective weave.
And that every single one of those strands deserves attention, dignity, and respect.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by eCotra Foundation.